Welcome to the Rearview Mirror Podcast, looking back on all that we don't know and a few things that we do.
Okay.
We didn't do a mic check.
Okay, ready,
mic,
set.
Mic check. Hot mic. Hot check. Mic check.
Now we're ready.
Okay, let's go.
Okay, good morning. Welcome to episode 12 of the Rearview Mirror Podcast.
Oh.
I know.
Are you doing a radio show?
Yeah, it feels like it, doesn't it? Sponsored by
Johnny Fever. Welcome to the radio show with Jeff Helton. Spend some discs for you this morning.
Sponsored by Beatty Feed Seed here in Cleveland, Tennessee.
There's a little Gordon Lightfoot to get us started. you went radio voice on me right out of the gate.
Oh, you are radio voice, man. That's what you
always are. Yeah, but this is because
those good pipes.
Well, it's just because I've done a lot of damage to my throat with various things over the years. So
let's talk about the various ways you've damaged your throat today.
We can. Yeah, we certainly can.
Oh, gosh. Anyway, how's your week?
It's fine.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Nothing to report?
No, nothing. Okay. Nothing exciting.
No,
fair enough. Nothing that I can remember that's standing out at the moment.
But. Very well. Very well.
And you?
Yeah, been a crazy week. Just today's the anniversary date of the death of my father and my little brother. They died the same day, years apart.
Really? Yeah. I don't think I knew that.
Yeah. It's so funny. I joke about it sometimes, which, you know, is never appropriate, but that's me. April 11th, 4/11. So my brother died in 1991. And then in 2017, my dad died. But what was weird was earlier that morning, like at 7 o'clock that morning, my oldest son, Josh, and I took our little boxer, Maya, to the vet to have her put down. She'd had this big tumor. So we put her down like at 8 o'clock, 7:30 that morning. Get back home about 9 o'clock. The family's all there. You know, they love that dog. They were kind of teary about it. And it surprised me how teary I was putting a dog down. If you've never done that, it's really not a laughing matter. I mean, it was the hardest thing to do. Well, an hour later after I get home, the place, Brookdale, you know, where dad was living, called and said, "Hey, something's up with your dad. Can you come over here?" And I got over there, and there was an ambulance and a couple of police cars. I walk in. Sure enough, he had passed during the middle of the night, taking a fall. And just, you know, 90 years old in a month. You know, he just celebrated his 90th birthday. But I cope with pain sometimes through humor or through stupidity, maybe is even the better word. And I was thinking, I got a country music song to write. And it's something like this. On 4/11, my brother, my father, and my dog all went to heaven. I don't know. There's something in there.
It may have already been done.
Yeah. No, there's plenty.
I don't know that I want to be recording this with you on 4/11.
Yeah, I know. It's funny, when the day Dad died, I went to pick Sarah up. She was living in East Nashville at the time. And I said, "Sweetie, this 4/11 thing is weird. It's like, you know, loved ones die on this day." I said, "Let's go buy a lottery ticket." I'd never bought a lottery ticket. I thought, you know what? Let's go play the numbers. And so we played the numbers and, you know, basically threw away 10 bucks. But, yeah, it's an interesting day in our lives. But anyway, on top of that, I mentioned to you earlier before we started, even my neighbor across the street, his father died this week, and I'm getting to speak at the funeral today, and I'm honored to do that. But I've probably – when the closest home this week for our family was, you know, I've been so excited about this 10th grandbaby coming in the fall, October, November. And our Josh and Jess, and with their permission, I would say this, but they lost the baby this week, miscarried. Mm. And, you know, it's just sad when you see that something you have so much hope for and like, oh my gosh, this is new life coming, and watching them navigate it. And there were a couple of scary moments for them too, just what's going on. And thank God for a medical community that surrounded them beautifully. And, you know, Jess is recovering, but, you know, it's been a little bit of a heavy week that way, just thinking about the reality of life. And uncertainty, you know. It's had me thinking a lot about, you know, we're recording this on Friday, and next Friday will be Good Friday. And so I think I've come in this morning thinking about that. And I've just thought about, you know, in the Christian world, Good Friday and Easter, it's kind of like the Super Bowl of the Christian calendar, really. You know, it's like as big as it gets, Easter, you know. And even if you're not a person of faith, I think the principles from Good Friday and Easter are just universally true, that before there's new life, there's often something that dies before it. And, you know, that's that cycle of hope and then loss, and how do we navigate that? So I've just been thinking about that a lot this week, Steve, just about, you know, kind of this time of spring, even when everything's coming alive, but realizing, gosh, just a few months ago, you know, I was complaining about everything dying as you know, as you go fall to winter. But it really is the circle of life, as the old Lion King story said. And I've just been thinking about that a lot today, I guess, as we're coming here, thinking about, man, how do those changes, those losses, those transitions in our lives, you know, how do we navigate them? How do we navigate them well?
What do you think is the key to, what are some keys to navigating transition?
Yeah. It seems to me, I mean, just top of my head here, it seems to me like there's something in that word acceptance, you know, that just realizing that something's changing. And I think, you know, we don't like endings. And I heard somebody once say, before every new beginning, there's an ending. And, you know, you think about it. If you get excited and you and Jen find, oh my gosh, there's this new house we want to go move into and you decide to move
into. Hey, why don't you use another example?
It's a terrible example for you guys. No, but you want to buy a new car? Does that work?
Again, there's something else. Something else.
Okay.
Go ahead. That's
we'll
fine.
With the house. Yeah. No, but you know, you think about it. If you go, man, we want to buy a new house. There's so much excitement about the new house and building it or moving into it or whatever. But there's also the ending, the saying farewell to a place where, oh my gosh, we raised our kids here and there's memories here. And it's always counterintuitive at one level because most of us get so excited about what's new. If we're not careful, we don't say goodbye to what we're saying goodbye to, even in something as simple as a house.
Right.
But I do think there's something in that of going with a new beginning. Part of understanding transition is that there's an ending that's happened as well.
Yeah. Well, it's change.
Yes.
And we don't like change.
Yeah. We're resistant, right?
Right. Yep. I mean, one of the stories I tell myself is that I do like change. And I think I do at a lot of levels and probably don't pay enough attention to what's gone. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I can be out of sight, out of mind pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But it's just change. Mm-hmm. And one of the hard parts I think about transitions, and you know, you think, you know, Josh and Jess are going through a transition now, a grieving, mm-hmm. and you know, we have adult kids, that's a different relationship, that's a transition. Yep. Parents get older, that's a transition. Life changes constantly. So one of the things I think we've talked about before that somehow we have to get comfortable with, I don't know how to do this necessarily, but you have to get comfortable with the fact that life's always changing.
Yes.
And your perceptions of the way things were or mm-hmm. the way a person was or is it's evolving and changing.
It was either Max Dupree or Peter Drucker who said, our culture eats change for breakfast. In other words, it's there constantly. I loved when you introduced that word change and then you use the word transition too. And, you know, I use them as synonyms all the time. They feel like they're just the same word. But this week, in light of all that happened, I pulled out this old book. I bet this book's 40 plus years old from William Bridges called Managing Transitions. It's an old business book. And I'm going to read the first paragraph. I hadn't planned on it. I just had it land here, but it's just exactly what you just said. And I think he says this so succinctly as we think about this topic. He said, it isn't the changes that do you in, it's the transitions. Change is not the same as transition. Change is situational. The new site, the new boss, the new team, the new roles, the new policy. Transition is the psychological process people go through to come to terms with the change. Change is external. Transition is internal. I think those words are great. You know, that change happens. We want to fight. We want to resist the change. What we're really doing is we're processing the transition that we're in the middle of.
Hmm. Think about that a little bit. That's good.
In his book, he has this little chart he draws, and you know, it's so simple. But it's like three boxes. You know, on a horizontal line, and the first box says ending. The third box says new beginning. And in the middle box in between, I forgot what his phrase is that he uses, but the phrase that I've always used there is messy middle, that there's this unknown place, you know, we're getting a new neighbor, you know, I mean, something super benign. We're getting a new neighbor. Oh, wait a minute. I'm going to miss my old neighbor. You know, there's the ending, but I'm excited. Maybe they'll be really good people, but what if they're not? What if they don't like dogs and we have a dog? What if they put up a fence and we don't want a fence? You know, there's the messy middle. And that's right. where the transitional angst almost begins to happen for a lot of us, I think.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think there's, you know, we probably all fall into one category or another. I love the new beginning, the shiny object. I'm drawn to it.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. And well, it's not always great. Sometimes there needs to be an evaluation of what, you know, what's new, especially, you know, in transition, I can get out of the messy middle pretty quickly and get on to the new thing. But there are things to learn in that.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on your personality, some people are more apt to sit in that for a little bit than others. But
yeah.
I wonder what happens if you, so what does not navigating transition look like?
Hmm.
Not navigating it well.
Yeah. That's a great question. I'd love for you to speak in that as well.
Well, I ask you.
I know, but you've been through transition too. Man, I just think about my own life. It's, you know, even in job transitions or role transitions back in my work days, you know, I think it's where there's almost this, you almost dig your heels in. You almost like denying this isn't really happening, you know, or no, I don't want this to happen. I remember there's a model, I think it's called the Kubler-Ross model of grief. And it's, you know, those five stages of grieving. And, you know, there's bargaining and denial and depression. And we go through all these phases to try to get to acceptance. But I think sometimes the reasons it's hard to accept is because the change comes as such a shock. And you think of the big ones. I remember, man, years ago, getting a phone call of a family who their 14-year-old daughter had just suddenly died. You know, no reason for it, no foul play, nothing. Just one of those crazy things that they knew nothing about in her body, right? And I remember rushing to the hospital to be with the family, and I remember walking in and seeing this mom lying on top of her daughter on top of the gurney and just engulfing in her and just screaming, no, this can't be, this isn't true, she's okay. And, you know, she's not delusional, she's not psychotic, it's just that massive moment of how can this be, put your mind in that state of, you know, no judgment at all, but in that mind of that state, it's like, oh my gosh, how can this be?
Overwhelming
grief. Well, that's extreme, but I think we can do that with, you know, the kid whose parents say we're going to move across the country because I've got a better job offer, but these are my best friends. I can't leave them. No, right. We're not, you know, I think it's when we try to dig our heels in and try to, again, in William Bridges' language, it's not that we're fighting against the change, but we're really fighting the transition because sometimes it's inevitable the change is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's one of the things that come to my mind is just when I can't accept that, man, this is going to impact my life. This is going to adjust the way I live. So people who lose a job quickly, you know, nobody wakes up in the morning going, man, this is going to be such a great day to lose a job, you know,
right.
And the repercussions of that are massive.
Yeah. Even in, this, of course, sports analogy came to my mind, but, you'll hear this in basketball a lot, the transition, you know, from one end of the floor, soccer, one end of the field
That's
to
good.
The other,
yeah.
They, you know, it's understood in that you accept the transition and you have to get back, you know, or there are going to be repercussions
that's
if you don't.
And,
you know, even in football, they talk about situational stuff where there's a quick turnover and there's a sudden change and a transition. So I think one of the things, and again, one of the reasons I think I so encourage kids to get involved in sports is because there's so many things that it teaches you that you don't even know, but the transition's assumed,
mm-hmm.
you know, change is assumed. There's change all the time. It never stays the same.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're kind of thrust into that. As we get older, you know, you get in the work world or with your kids and there's change, I think it depends on your personality, how you react to it. Mm-hmm. I know I can get, I don't know, I have to think about that a little bit, but I think I can get, if I'm hurt by the change,
mm-hmm.
I'll just kind of ignore it and move on.
Yeah. Right.
You know?
Yep.
Some personalities may sit in it and stay in that hurt for a while. I stay in it. I just don't know it. I just ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
But a healthy transition, I think, acknowledges other people's weaknesses, vulnerabilities, our own weaknesses and vulnerabilities, and moving on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting that I really loved how you said that. And even the sports analogy of how quickly you're forced to respond to those transitional moments.
You don't get time to think.
Right, right. And I think there are places in life where, like sports, that's exactly how we have to do it. Probably certain industries that move really fast. I think of guys on the floor doing trading, you know, my gosh, they've got to make lightning fast decisions,
right.
you know. But it seems like the other extreme is people then who get stuck in that messy middle, get stuck in that transition, mm-hmm. and almost pine away or yearn for the old days. And
yeah.
it becomes their place of resistance. I mean, do you see both of those things?
Oh, sure. And you know, then I ask the question, well, were the old days really that great? Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
But, and if I, you know, then you get into the, you know, people ask the question, hey, maybe if I'd have done something differently,
mm-hmm.
you know, but that road's fraught with peril too.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't know how things would turn out if you know, that's a, that can be a mind numbing exercise, really.
Right.
Yeah, I think a lot of that, again, depends on your personality. If you, mm-hmm. whether you move on, deal with it in a healthy way, move on, don't deal with it in a healthy way, or get stuck.
Mm-hmm.
But to get stuck is, that's tough.
Mm-hmm. It is. I think that's one of the things, even this week, watching Josh and Jess, how they process this loss. You know, they want a big family. They're very public about that. They love their four kids they have now. And there was such excitement with the whole family about bringing another life into this world. And, I mean, you know, after they got through the time with the doctors, Josh sent a text to our whole family. I brought the copy just to read to you. It's very short, but he's such a deep, deep well of water. And we were all waiting to know what's going on, you know, because, you know, they'd gone to the doc to check it out. She knew something wasn't right, and they went in, and we didn't know if the baby was okay or not. And this is a very short but concise text that Josh sent. He said, "Little baby is with the King of Kings. Grieve to never meet this human here on earth, but at peace knowing he or she is in the land of no more pain, no more sorrow, no more tears, worshiping with the angels. And we await the day we'll meet and join them in their song." Mm. I just thought, golly.
That's really good.
I mean, it's not that he wasn't grieving. We were talking last night, you know, and there's been moments where he says, I just have a little come apart grieving. Why not? Why can't I have this little child?
Yeah.
Mm. And yet there's something in him that can look out and say there's more to the story than just this loss, just this change, just this transition.
What's the hardest transition you've ever gone through?
Mm. And the first thing that came to my mind was the death of my mom when I was 20. And I was just trying to think, is that because, you know, this anniversary date and the other stuff going in my brain? But I think that probably was, you know, because life was pretty, in real time, my life was pretty idyllic as a 20-year-old young boy, you know, living at home, going to college, good friends, great friends, just a wonderful time in my life. And my mom's death was really sudden. And, you know, I think it was one of those times where I feel like, in some ways, I feel like I was playing a sport, because both my father and my brother, I mean, I remember the hospital when they declared that mom had passed. This was within like 5 hours when we took her to the hospital, just a massive cerebral bleed. And I remember both my father and my brother at the same time kind of fell into my arms. I mean, just the way we were standing kind of, and they're sobbing and they're weeping. And I remember my brother's knees buckled. I'm trying to hold him up, and he was a big old boy. And I remember in that moment thinking to myself, oh gosh, I can't be sad. I got to help carry these two guys. And so I kind of, it was like the sports metaphor. I just kind of did the fast transition, mm-hmm. thought, okay, I just, I got to show up and do things. And sure enough, you know, I went to the cemetery, picked out the plot, went to the funeral home, called the pastor, set up the service, did it all. Cause my dad was almost immobilized. And again, mom's death being so sudden, I realized that. The reason I think it was one of the biggest transitions in my life is, it wouldn't be until a decade later, Steve, that I'd begin to realize, oh my gosh, I moved so fast and furious through that to keep everybody else okay that I never stopped and dealt with my own loss.
Hmm.
And so, you know, I think it was very significant, but it wasn't processed until almost a decade later. And I just don't think I realized the residual effect of it. That's the first thing that comes to my mind is that was such a massive moment of that's so not the way life's supposed to work, is how my 20-year-old brain would have said it, you know?
Yeah. When do you think you processed that?
It was after I was married. You know, I think it was, yeah, I bet it was a decade later. And I remember talking with a friend, and he said, you know, you talk about your mom's death you're talking about your mom's death like you're reading a paragraph out of the newspaper. He said, there's no emotion to it. How did you grieve her? And I was like, grieve? He goes, man, when you go through a loss like that, there's a place to be sad. Mm. So I didn't have time to be sad. I had to. And as soon as I said that, I can remember something rising up me going, I still need to. So I think it was quite some time later before I really could slow down and realize, okay, life's not the same as it used to be.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But some of that, you said earlier, personalities, some of that is my personality. You put your head down, you keep moving forward.
Right.
What's the next thing to do?
Right.
You know?
We'll go back and take care of that later.
Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. Big
right.
word.
Yeah. Right.
What about you? I love that question. Like, what comes to your mind when you think about big Man. Transition, big change in your life that's impacted you?
I was thinking about that, you know, I think looking back, the first thing that came to my mind is, you know, my parents got divorced when I think I was about 12. That was probably one of the first, hey, life doesn't work the way it's supposed to. For sure. Mm-hmm. In retrospect, again, I've said this before, my mom is great. She's navigated that really well. To me, in my relationship, my dad wasn't a harsh guy. He could be to other people, but he was just absent.
Yeah, just not there.
You know, and so, but looking back, God had plenty of redemptive. There were plenty of redemptive options in my life mm-hmm. that he provided mm-hmm. after that. So, it was, and for the two of them, probably that was the healthiest thing at the moment.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
So, I think, and then grieving what I think when my, you know, particularly when my son was probably that age, just grieving what I didn't have.
Yeah.
You know, was a transition, and that took some time. My kids went to college, empty nest. That's a transition time. Mm-hmm. Didn't anticipate that one, mm-hmm. but it was
kind of snuck up on it.
Honestly, for sure,
I think. Yep.
You know, and Jen and I are looking at each other like, "Wow, we really." The majority of our brains went to our kids.
Now
what do we do?
Yeah. Right.
Who are you again?
But that's that messy middle right there.
Yeah,
like you know, they're gone. Yeah. Wait. That's a reality.
Yeah. There's some conflict like? Associated with that. Hey, do I, mm-hmm. whoa, what's going on? Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And took some navigating good on the other side, mm-hmm. but a real change.
Yeah.
First world kind of change,
right.
but still
yeah.
in this culture where we are, that's a change.
You know, it's interesting when you said that, I've never thought this before. I thought, I wonder if sometimes when we're in conflict in our marriages, or I don't, not even just our marriages, I mean, in a relationship with anybody, I wonder if a good diagnostic question would be, wait a minute, is something changing right now that we're resisting?
That's a great question.
You know, because I think there's a lot of times, and maybe they're really small changes, but nonetheless, they're changes. You know, I think about, you know, when the mom goes back to work, you know, and suddenly she's saying, hey, what days can you take the kids to school? I can't take them every day. And, you know, there becomes this huge fight around it. Well, is the fight really about who's driving the kids to school? Or is it just that, well, you know, back to Bridges' book, man, this is a psychological, emotional transition. And this is so hard because it was a lot easier when I didn't have to worry about the kids in the morning, you know?
And I wonder what it is about our culture too, that we are so resistant to change.
Yeah.
Because when I read, you know, when you know, the old saying, art reflects life. So when you listen to music or watch good movies, it's reflective of life. There's constant change. Even if you were to read through the Bible, particularly the Old Testament, as a story, I mean, it's constant change.
Yes.
Uprooting from one place to another with no plan.
Right.
You know, the old saying, hey, don't ever quit one job before you have another one. Well, I mean, okay,
that's
may be
laughable.
There may be some wisdom in that, but if you read the Bible, that's not even close.
Right.
I mean, people are uprooted constantly yeah. from family, friends, yeah. and location. But there's something in our culture today, I think in this country, that we are so programmed to resist change, to plan for it, and to just navigate it so mm-hmm. carefully mm-hmm. that
yeah.
Anything that just the slightest, and I'm talking to myself really,
right,
the slightest thing throws you off.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't know. I think that's an overall battle of, I'm not sure the values of there. It's a great place to live. I believe it's the best place to live. That's my opinion. There are some values in our country that I think are diametrically opposed to Christianity.
100%. Yeah.
Both those things can exist at the same time.
And they do.
I
think you almost have to be blind if you can't see those.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my political take for the day. Beyond that, I don't know anything.
Yeah. And I know less than that then. But it is interesting. Earlier when you were talking and you introduced, you know, we were talking about transitions. This thought popped in my mind and I thought, I don't want to talk about that, but here I'm going to talk about it just for a nanosecond. But, you know, you think about the phrase transition of power during an election year.
Yeah.
And the way many of us as Americans on either side of the aisle can react to that. And it is interesting. We're not reacting to the change. The change is done. I mean, the vote has happened.
It's done.
But we are in turmoil. Is that too strong sometimes? About the transition. Oh, no, what's this going to be? Now what's going to happen? You know, and again, every 4 years, I think we're in this transitional crisis for a season as we're trying to find out, how do we get out of the messy middle and get to the new beginning? What's it really going to look like? You know, are we really going to be okay? Am I going to still have Medicare? Or, you know, or what's going to take over our agendas? All those crazy questions that we all, not crazy, but all those questions that people feel a lot of angst about. But
and that really can't be answered.
Some of them can be.
In a quick period of time, right. If they can be answered at all. You think about the fluctuation in the stock market. Mm-hmm. I'll refer back to our mutual friend's data since its inception. It's about 9.5%.
Yeah.
And so it takes a hit for 4 days. Well, what happens? Well, I think we know intuitively.
Yep.
Unless there's a catastrophic event, it's probably coming back.
Right. Right.
You know?
Yeah. But even our lifetimes, you know, there've been some pretty catastrophic events and they've negatively impacted it
for a time.
Exactly. And it's come back.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but again, I think there's something in the American DNA that's, that does not foster handling change well.
Yeah, yeah. I have a hunch that transcends America too, though.
Could be.
You know, it feels like, I mean, I'm thinking when you're talking about the story of the Old Testament, you know, we kind of whitewash those stories sometimes. But the reality is there's places we can read that, man, there was resistance. You want me to go where? You want me to go speak to who? But I can't speak. I can't do that. I mean, you know, there's
no way I'm telling him that's my wife. I'm going to tell him that's my sister because he's going to kill me if not. I mean, it's like a mini series. You know? I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah. But a lot of that, I think, may very well be in the lens of what we're talking about today. It's this resistance to change / transition.
Yeah.
So by golly, I'll lie. I'll bob. I'll weave. I'll create whatever I need to create in the way of a story.
Right.
To try to get through it.
Yeah, no, I think that's true.
When you see maybe with one of your kids or with Jen or maybe with just a good friend, whatever, when you see somebody going through, you know, one of those hard transitional change moments in their lives, how do you come alongside people like that? Like, what do you do walking with a good friend or family member in one of those moments that, because it does, it creates angst, you know, creates pain.
Well, I've learned from my wife that I don't have to say every thought that's in my head. Okay, that's helpful for a lot of people. Because, and seriously, I've learned to not talk for a bit.
Yeah.
Because I probably lean toward a lack of empathy in those areas sometimes. Because I mean, change is inevitable, you know, and ton of people are having to relocate, rethink life because of some cuts in government jobs and right now in DC. And that's tough. Mm. And I mean, we've all had to go through it.
Yep.
So let's figure out how to do it.
Yep.
So I generally try to, you know, take a step back and know, I know enough about myself to know, okay, I'm not the most empathetic guy sometimes. So let's just listen. But then we'll try to bring whatever that personality type needs.
Mm.
And some personality types, I don't bring a lot to the table.
Yeah. Because you know that wouldn't be good for them, right?
Probably.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some I can help, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, I just think you know, with my kids, it's easier. I know them well. So, learned how to navigate what they need. I mean, my daughter likes to have a plan and she thinks through things and likes to, she'll grieve a little bit and just kind of let her. And then she'll come up with a plan that's really logical and she's open to feedback. Mm-hmm. There's some times she needs that. And, my son, he, you know, I think sometimes he needs some exhortation. Hey, you know, just kind of like more like what I would need. Hey, let's keep the main thing focused. Keep the focus on the main thing.
Yeah, keep your eyes on the prize, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, don't get distracted, and you're doing great. And so, with Jen, you know, Enneagram 6 is tougher because they, you know, their brains process quickly. There's a lot going on. So, I think with her, I tend to overtalk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of just listen sometimes.
Yeah.
And, and she's smart. She'll process things. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing for that particular personality type is life did not work out maybe the way I expected it to sometimes in certain areas, or when I'm talking specifically when there's a change,
right?
You know, hey, this is not what I planned on. They like to plan and have things go according to plan. And yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So I loved what you said about, you know, maybe one of the best things we do is be careful with our words, you know, maybe not even say stuff at times. I have not thought of this in years. When my mom died, you know, I was 20, my little brother John was 15. And, you know, the traditions we have around funerals, I don't know, the older I get, the more I go, is that really a cool thing we do? I don't know. But, you know, there's the receiving of friends and visitation, which is great. You get to be hugged and hug people that you see and love. And, you know, for some personality types, you know, just it's good just to connect.
So when you say that, I think I can't think of anything more awful.
Yeah. Panic attack for you, right?
Well, I mean, just in the grieving process, now I'm going to have to interact with a bunch of people that I don't really know.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah, no, and you're wiring, I see that. For me, I don't know, every face just felt like, gosh, you knew something about my mom and you want to be here.
Oh, okay.
But I remember it was before the whole people came and John and I are standing, you know, the casket's open. We're standing in front of it, looking down at her. And first time I think we had seen her, and I don't know where Dad was in that moment, but it's just the two of us were sitting there and we're just quiet. And, you know,
it's an open casket.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a tender moment. And one of my mom's aunts, so our great aunt or whatever, aunt twice removed, I have no idea what you call those people. She's probably 80 years old at the time. She comes walking up, you know, just slowly, and she looks over right beside me and John, and she looks in the casket. And God love her, she's searching for words to say, I'm sure. And she goes, doesn't your mother look beautiful lying there? My 15-year-old brother goes, hell no, she's dead.
Perfect.
But isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, watch those words. And it's funny, I remember other people in, you know, trying to walk well with me in my season of loss. There was this one gentleman named Adrian Varlack. Lost contact with him through the years. And he and my mom just had a special friendship. And I remember when he came in the funeral home that night, I remember seeing him in the back of the room and in this long line to greet people, you know, how we do it in the South. And I remember when he just got up to me, all he did was he looked me in the eyes, he hugged me, patted me on the shoulder, and then left. I thought, okay, you wait in that line 40 minutes just to do that. But I remember also thinking, that's the only guy I really remember coming through the line that night. Because there was something in his tenderness that just said, I see you, with his eyes, touch me, I'm here for you, and just left.
There's no magic word to say.
There really isn't there? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think when you're interacting with people, change, and so interchange the word change, grief, transition, any of those things. I just think sometimes, I've learned this the hard way at times, just an economy of words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. There'll be time. Mm-hmm. And particularly for the, you know, for folks, its personalities are more feeling oriented or they need to process things. They're a little more sensitive. Again, I don't have to say everything that's on my mind, and there's no fix at that moment.
Right.
So I think just listening.
Well, it's what we've talked about. I know in the past there is a power of just being present with people sometimes.
Yeah,
That is enough, you know, and that's I think, good reminder for any of us. I think I appreciate us being able to take a few minutes to talk about this. I think for me, it's probably good just, this has been on my mind so much, you know, because of our family situation this week. And it is interesting because I found myself with a a bigger anticipation about Easter in these last few days. You know, I've always loved Easter. It's kind of my favorite holiday. And I think for me, it is about the new beginning, you know, and again, in the Christian faith, you know, again, it's the Super Bowl. Boy, this is the day when, you know, God powerfully proves that nothing, not even death, will separate us from being able to be loved by Him. And I think as we move toward Easter, I think about that story that Tony Campolo used to tell. And Tony Campolo was a sociologist at some, I can't remember which school, but an East Coast school. And he was asked to come in and speak at what was called a preach-off. I'd never heard of one of these until I heard him tell the story. So I guess in the African-American churches, back in this day, this would have been probably the 70s or 80s, they would have these Sunday afternoons where there'd be three or four preachers that would come, and they would each do their best sermon. And it was basically like a competition. I mean, it sounds wrong on multiple levels, but on the other hand, people loved coming and listening. They got three or four sermons in, you know, 3 or 4 hours in the afternoon. So Tony tells
feels
this,
like a lot.
Yeah. Pretty sure none of our churches
are there food involved
in
that? Because that's a long time.
Especially if it's good fried chicken, I'm there. But Tony Campolo tells this story. And he said, you know, that this first guy got up and preached, and the second guy got to preach, and then Tony was the third one. And he said, man, I feel like I got up there and I gave my best words and I raised my voice and I got the crowd, you know, screaming and hollering and clapping and yelling. You know, that culture was perfect, evidently. And he said, and I remember sitting down thinking, I've done a good job. And this was in the springtime when they were doing this, I guess. And he said, and then the last guy that was preaching that morning was this like 70-year-old white haired guy, been a pastor his whole life. And when he sat down, the old man reached over and put his hand on Tony's arm. He goes, sit down, boy, and watch this. And Campolo tells a story where the old man gets up and basically all he does for like the first 5 minutes, he goes, it was Friday and they laid my Jesus in the tomb, but Sunday's a coming. And that became the refrain. It was Friday and the disciples ran away. It was Friday and Mary was crying. It was Friday, you know, just in that cadence that only those guys could do. But Sunday's a coming. And, you know, you think about it, that's the Christian message of Easter week, is that there was a man who walked the earth who was horrifically murdered and crucified on a Friday, but who on Sunday rises from the dead. And, you know, again, in the Christian faith, that's so important because that's what gives us hope. But what I love about it, it's what we've been talking about this today. It's the principle of life, that before there's a new beginning, there is this death. And I think this in this season of life, I want to remember that there's something bigger going on than just the moment. Because I'm sure on that Friday when Jesus is hanging on a cross dying, that his disciples must have a sense of all hope is gone. Man, this is what we thought it was supposed to be. I love the story of the travelers on the road to Emmaus who are traveling along, and you know, that's their line. Jesus shows up and walks with them after he's been resurrected. They don't even recognize him. And their line is this, you know, do you not know what's happened? Because they don't know who's walking with them. And they said, we had hoped he was the one who was going to restore us to power. Hmm. And so where are we right now? We're downcast. We're depressed. We're sad. And again, I think that's what loss can do to us, is that we focus so much on the loss. And again, rightly so to grieve it, but that we forget maybe there's something that's starting to be birthed out of this. And so I think in this season of the year we're in, springtime, where everything's starting to bloom around here, and even with Easter coming up, that's just what was on my heart today, is that, golly, wherever we may be, wherever a person that may be listening in today may be, the losses of our life are not the final word. They're a big word. Yeah. We need to be attentive to them, but they're not the final word. There's a new beginning coming. There's change coming. You know, I'm dumb enough to believe that there's always hope in every situation.
Yeah, I would agree. And one of the interesting things about the resurrection is the folks you just talked about, the disciples and the folks on the Emmaus Road, they had no context for that.
Right.
So it was something, the change that occurred, the hope that occurred, was they could never have predicted it or planned it.
Right.
And so I think that's encouraging, because in the moment when you are down or you're grieving, there's a hope that you can't imagine.
Yeah.
It's not something I can come up with. Right. I can plan, you know, you lose a job, man, I'm really dreaming about this new job. Right. Well, there's something out there that can be done that God can do that you can't even dream of.
Right.
Because that was if you said what, I'm going to let you guys list 50 things that could happen Sunday. Well, you know, raising himself from the dead would not be one of them.
Yeah, that's not going to show up on my list.
Yeah, so right. Which is, again, another, that's the hopeful part of the faith. It's yeah. something we can't even imagine.
Yeah.
That can come from those transitions and change and grief.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know if I have anything else on this. I'm just glad we could take the space to talk about this some. And I think, I know, started by telling Josh and Jess's story of the miscarriage, and I'm very aware there's a lot of couples who've walked through miscarriages, and I just want to end with this. I don't take that lightly. I know that's a brutal, brutal moment to walk through, and it's not just a moment; it's a season of walking well through it. And after Josh sent the text out that I read earlier, maybe we'll just end with this. Jessica sent something that she had read from Mother Angelica. And it's just this beautiful words. And I mean, it's very much to the heart of a mom or a dad in the loss of a child. And I don't know, I'd just like to end with this. It says, "My Lord," this is obviously a mom or a dad speaking, "My Lord, the baby is dead. Why, my Lord? Dare I ask why? It will not see the whisper of the wind or see the beauty of its parent's face. It will not see the beauty of your creation or the flame of a sunrise. Why, my Lord? Why, my child? Do you ask why? Well, I will tell you why. You see, the child lives. Instead of the wind, he hears the sounds of angels singing before my throne. Instead of the beauty that passes, he sees every lasting beauty. He sees my face. He was created and lived a short time, so the image of his parents imprinted on his face may stand before me. He knows secrets of heaven unknown to men on earth. He laughs with a special joy that only the innocent possess. My ways are not the ways of man. I create for my kingdom, and each creature fills a place in that kingdom that could never be filled by another. He has never felt hunger or pain. He has never felt pain or sin. I breathed the soul into a seed, made it grow, and then I called it forth. I am humbled before you, my Lord, for questioning your wisdom, goodness, and love. I speak as a fool, forgive me. I acknowledge your sovereign rights over life and death. I thank you for the life that began so short a time ago that gets to enjoy so long of an eternity." In the transitions of life, there's always something bigger going on. And I don't know, during this Easter season, I don't want to forget that.
It's good. Yeah.
Thanks for listening in, Dave. Appreciate the conversation we had too.
Yeah, good.
All right, see you.